Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. If you're a fan of Saturday Night Live or late night TV, you probably know comic Seth Meyers. We'll get to know him a little bit better in just a couple of moments. But first, running a city prosecutor's office is no laughing matter, especially here in St. Louis, where violent crime makes headlines just about every day. Circuit Attorney Jennifer Joyce's job is to prosecute criminals. Her plate is always full. She's especially concerned about gun violence, and most recently was the subject of some criticism for deciding not to prosecute a city police officer who shot and killed a young black man, Vonderit Meyers, last October. Jennifer Joyce joins me in studio to talk about that case and other issues. Jennifer, nice to see you again. Thanks for coming in.
Great to be here.
I should point out to our audience that this was a situation which you precipitated. Your office indicated you wanted to talk about Vonderit Meyers, and we're always happy to have Jennifer Joyce in studio. But that report was issued a couple of weeks ago. Why do you want to keep talking about it?
Well, this was the first case that we reviewed in keeping with the new policy where we're going to review all shooting cases by the police department. Prior to their new policy, we would only review cases when the internal affairs investigators determined that they thought a crime had been committed, and then they would give it to us, like any other crime, to review. Chief Dodson has changed that, and now my office is going to be providing an independent review of all shooting cases where someone was hit, so fatalities and injuries. And this was our first one, and we put a lot of thought into how we wanted to do this. And we assembled a team of five or six prosecutors, and very experienced prosecutors, including one U.S. attorney who worked with us on this case. And we basically did the whole investigation from scratch. We didn't take anything at face value from the police, where we had the opportunity to go out and interview the witnesses and see the evidence ourselves. And then came the decision as to how we were going to report our findings to the community. And I looked around the country, and some prosecutors who do this just do a one-line, "I find no criminal conduct, sincerely, prosecutor." And I didn't think that that was a good idea. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you have the Bob McCullough, put the whole kitchen sink in the grand jury, and it takes months. And I didn't like that idea, too, as a general course. I'm not criticizing his decision in that case, but I didn't want to just do that in every single case for a variety of reasons. So we decided that we would write a comprehensive report which outlined all the evidence that we saw, outlined the legal statutes that were involved, and gave the reasons why we made our decision. And our report in total was 51 pages. And I think a lot of people don't know that the report exists, or decided not, they didn't need to read it because they had heard from someone else what the report was, or I don't know. For whatever reason, it became clear to me that as much as we've tried to communicate the basis for our decision, that message wasn't reaching some people, and that's why I wanted to come and talk about it today.
It has reached some people, however, who just don't buy it.
Well, that's true, and there's nothing I can do about that. All I can do, you know, and I'm kind of used to that. I've been a prosecutor for over 20 years. I've been in this job for 15 years, and it's a rare decision that I make that doesn't make somebody angry. I get disagreed with all day, every day, including on the weekends, if you ask my husband. So that doesn't bother me so much. I mean, there's only so much you can do, but we really struggled to put a comprehensive review out there of everything we looked at. And some of the stuff we uncovered is not good for the officer. Some of the stuff we uncovered is not good for the police association. They had a press conference where they said that gun residue in that case was dispositive, that ended the inquiry. And we put in our report that, no, it didn't actually tell us anything. So there's something for everyone to like in the report. There's something for everyone to dislike.
It did tell you that Vonderit Meyers had a gun?
The evidence that we reviewed in this case, and talking to eyewitness, ear witness, and physical evidence, all pointed to the fact that Mr. Meyers had a gun and that he fired it at the police officer. We have a completely neutral eyewitness who saw the gunfire. It was dark, so they could see the muzzle flash back and forth. And at the end of the day, you don't get to shoot at the police. I mean, that's a violation of the law, regardless of what happened before that. And that's what all the evidence pointed to in this case.
So you're totally discounting what some people have alleged, that being that the police, and this has been known to happen in other places, the police dropped a gun after the shooting to implicate that he had one.
Well, I'm very open to that possibility, and it's my job to prosecute police who violate the law, and my track record shows that I'm not afraid to do that. I've done it on multiple occasions in my career. And so when we started this investigation, even though the police didn't find that there was a crime, we started with an open mind. And I had heard rumors to that effect that people saw the officer plant the gun. And so we took to the airwaves. We asked the public many times to come forward. We sent many letters, which are attached to our report, to the attorney for the Myers family, stating, you've made these statements. Please, please bring us witnesses. Please bring us people to talk to that saw this. And he never responded and never brought us anybody. We did know that there were some individuals with Mr. Myers that evening before he was shot. And the attorney would not bring them in. We had to go subpoena them. And when we forced them to come in, they took the Fifth Amendment in front of the grand jury. So at the end of the day, we make a decision to charge people based on the evidence that we have. And when we looked at the evidence, we had nothing to show any of those rumors were true.
How many police officers have you prosecuted over the years? Do you have a number?
God, I don't know. It would probably be between 10 and 20 different times.
The reason I ask that is because it's come up many, many times since the Brown shooting in Ferguson. The difficulty that prosecutors have in charging police with anything, because they work so closely together that it really is almost counterintuitive.
Well, I... Any prosecutor is going to work with law enforcement. That's the nature of it. And I actually don't have a problem with it. I mean, I have a lot of respect for police, and most of the police are doing their best to do a great job, and it's a harder job than ever right now. And so when you have someone that's bringing dishonor to that occupation, I have no problem holding that person accountable. And it's something that I've done from the get-go. I mean, one of my first big cases that I had when I first got elected circuit attorney was prosecuting a police officer for murder. So it's part of the job, and most police officers understand that. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting because I get protesters on both sides of the issue. I have had occasion to speak with the union representatives for the police that tell me that they're not going to support me when I run for re-election because I'm too tough on the police. And then I have protesters who say that I'm covering up for the police. So if it's a mark of success that I've made everybody mad, then I guess I'm successful.
The demonstrations continue. I know you had some at your home after the report was released. You traveled with security, and quite frankly, we anticipated there could be some demonstrations here today just
yes.
because you're here.
Well, and that's another thing I want to say. I am really interested in talking to the public about their and answering their questions about this investigation. I mean, we really left no stone unturned. And we were, despite numerous pleas, were not provided with any evidence to substantiate the rumors that were going on. And when I charge people with a crime, I do it with evidence. Mm-hmm. You know, if I suspect Don Marsh committed a murder, I think you would expect me to have evidence beyond a reasonable doubt to prove that. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't be proving that based on Twitter rumors or things like that. And the same is true for anybody. Police officers included, and when I charge them with a crime. So I like to talk to people. I talk to people all the time on Twitter. I open my Twitter feed up for people to ask me questions, and I respond. Sometimes I get questions about the law. The other day I got a question about sports, you know, and I had to figure out what my answer would be to that. But I like a dialogue. What I don't appreciate is people come into my house late at night, 40 strong, screaming and yelling, pounding on my door. That is not fair to my neighbors. You know, I signed up for this job. I know you can't do this job without public criticism, and I accept that. But my neighbors did not sign up for it.
You talk about what's involved in doing your job, and you also mentioned re-election. This is somewhat of a digression, but our political reporters here have been hearing rumors, they tell us, that actually, even though you said you're going to run again in 2016, that you may not.
Well, I'm considering all my different options right now.
Oh, that sounds very political.
Doesn't it? Doesn't it? People always have rumors that I'm not running again because I'm actually not a traditional politician. To run for office, a lot of times you have to be on the phone asking people for money all the time. And I've made no secret of the fact that I really don't enjoy that part of the job. And I traditionally have one fundraiser every 4 years. So it's not uncommon for people to speculate, what am I going to do, because I haven't been having fundraisers. But in this case, yeah, I'm thinking about different options. But I've told my staff that I'm going to make a decision by the end of the summer. But the summer is very important in the city of St. Louis in terms of gun violence. And that is my passion right now. And I'm very focused on that.
Would among those options be the possibility of running for a different office?
There's all kinds of options.
Oh. And you say you're not a political person, but you sure sound like one.
Yeah, I don't like to raise money, but being a lawyer, I can certainly evade questions.
Right. So I've noticed. Well, stay tuned and let us know when you make that decision, if you would.
I will.
Let's talk about the role of the prosecutor. I'd like to go to the situation in Baltimore following the incident there that caused demonstrations.
Yes.
Your counterpart in Baltimore, within a matter of hours,
yes,
decided that she would press charges against the officers involved in this case. It
yes.
put the lid on that situation immediately. Is that the way to handle these kinds of situations?
The way to handle it, and I'm not, I don't know her, and I don't know what she saw, and I know she's received some criticism for the speed at which she made that decision, and I tend to stick up for fellow prosecutors because I know how tough the job is. It's quite possible that she had very clear-cut evidence that was presented to her, unlike the Vondrette Myers case where we didn't have any evidence presented to us. It's quite possible that she was involved in that investigation all along with the police for a couple of weeks and so was able excuse me, to make that decision very quickly. But how you do it is not so much a function of what you do. And what you need to do as a prosecutor is look at the evidence and determine whether a crime has been committed and if you have the evidence to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. If you don't have a yes to those two questions, then it's not appropriate for you to file charges as a prosecutor. It's not ethical to do so. So I have to assume that she had a yes to both of those questions quickly and were able to file those charges quickly.
We don't know, of course, but she was accused of pandering, given the volatile situation in her community at that time.
Yes, that's true. She was. And it's interesting. The police are calling for a special prosecutor there, whereas in the St. Louis County Michael Brown case, the protesters. And I think as a community, we need to understand the importance of having an independent prosecutor. And you shouldn't get to just switch prosecutors because you disagree with a decision that they made. Every 4 years is the time you get to switch prosecutors.
Right. That's Jennifer Joyce, the circuit attorney in the city of St. Louis. We have to take a break now. We'll come back and continue our conversation. There is lots to talk about, so stay with us. If you'd like to get into it, we'll take your calls at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can send us an email to talk@stlpublicradio.org, or if you'd prefer to send a tweet, do so at STL on Air. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation with St. Louis Circuit Attorney Jennifer Joyce in just a moment. But first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. The Missouri Highways and Transportation Commission met today to discuss a plan aimed at updating Interstate 70, a major conduit that has been the focus of several failed improvement proposals. The Hazelwood School District says Superintendent Grayling Tobias is retiring. He's been on paid leave since the middle of April. Tobias became Hazelwood superintendent in 2012, and the school board voted in March 2014 to extend his contract by a year. And Illinois Governor Bruce Rauner plans to meet with his cabinet the day after announcing he would close state facilities and curtail spending on child care and senior services if there is no agreement on a state budget by July 1st. Join St. Louis Public Radio this afternoon for local and regional news and throughout the day on our website at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Jennifer Joyce. Gun violence, that's the cause celeb for Jennifer Joyce today.
Absolutely.
And you've got a website up now in which is devoted to that particular subject.
That's correct.
And you've been talking about it a lot. Do you have any indication that anyone is listening to what you're saying?
I do. Part of the purpose of our new website is to inform people about the issue of gun violence in its entirety. You and I were talking before this about the frustration as to in the TV news, they only have a limited amount of time and they basically are just reporting crimes and not talking about the reasons why we have gun violence and what we can do about it. Our goal with our website is to educate people about the issue fully and inspire them to take action and then give them a list of things that they can do. And it's my belief that unless everybody in the community gets involved in some way, shape, or form, we're not going to meaningfully move the needle on this problem.
What kind of action can be taken?
Well, a lot of things. I mean, it depends on the individual and what they want to do. It can be everything from as involved as getting involved with a mentoring organization, working with young people. I mean, the primary cause for all crime, and particularly gun violence, in my opinion, is poverty and lack of economic opportunity, lack of mentorship, poor education. All of those forces create an environment where this type of gun violence and gang activity can take root and flourish. And it's frustrating for me as a law enforcement professional because that's something that I can't affect. Traditionally, you know, I'm in the courtroom and the police are locking people up and I'm prosecuting them. But you can have millions of police and prosecutors, and unless you solve those underlying social issues, you're never going to do anything meaningful with gun violence. So we're trying to be encouraging of people to get involved and work on those social issues. So work with young people, work with unwed mothers, teen mothers. Even if you don't want to go out and work individually with people, you know, when you do your charitable giving at the end of the year, focus on those organizations that are working to alleviate poverty and support young people. Lock up your gun. Don't bring your gun down to Busch Stadium and leave it in your glove box, because I can tell you in a matter of 20 seconds, the thief is going to break into your car and take it, and that's the first place he's going to look, is your glove box.
Is it realistic, though, to expect that the people that you really want to reach are going to be going to your website on the internet?
But they are. We've had a huge traffic to our website, and even when I speak in neighborhoods in the city where they don't have a lot of gun violence, people are waiting for me after the meeting wanting to know what they can do. We're getting ready to put up a list on our website of 10 things you can do to stop gun violence. And I encourage anybody to email me and I will send you that list. What my goal is that everybody in the community, and not just the city, because I get a lot of calls from Webster and Kirkwood, you know, everybody will have an idea what they can do so they can go to bed at night and know that they did their part.
Isn't the genie out of the bottle, though, with regard to guns? I mean, they're all over the place. There are probably more guns in the city of St. Louis than there is in the Fort Leonard Wood.
Yeah, I think there's a ton of guns out there, and that's an issue for another day. But I'm a lawful gun owner. I don't have a problem with guns per se. I have a problem with gun violence. And I think that a lot of times young people get into a culture in our community where it's just kind of the cool thing to do is to carry a gun. And disputes that would be settled with a fist fight back in my days at St. Joan of Arc, I mean, not me personally, obviously, but maybe once, but those things are now settled with firearms. And that is where the community can come in and start getting our young people to think about these things differently.
Chief Dotson, St. Louis City Police Chief, is also putting up a website. I'm not sure that it's up yet, but he wants to track judges, apparently, to see what their rulings are on the issue of gun violence. What is your thought about that? I mean, I'm assuming that a lot of judges aren't going to be too happy to be monitored this way, and that could affect you as a prosecutor.
Well, I think the chief is really frustrated that he's working very hard to combat gun crime, and he's seeing the same people over and over again. And I've made no secret of the fact that I'm unhappy with some of the sentences that I see. A lot of the gun crime that we see, particularly the gun possession cases, is really a crime without a consequence right now in our circuit. However, and I've talked to the chief about this, I don't know that it's a good and productive thing to have that kind of a monitoring website. And I think he's decided to wait and see and hold off on it. The reason is these cases are complex. There's a lot of different factors. We put a lot of information on our website about cases, and people can get information there. But to just track, decisions without the larger context, I don't know if that's helpful. And I got to say, I think a lot of the judges really do take this area, this issue of gun crime seriously. They live in the city. They care very much about the city. And, I don't think you can paint them all with the same brush.
And yet they didn't care about it enough to establish a gun court. It was up to the judges to do that. And I know you and the chief were proponents of such a court.
Yes, the mayor had a great idea to propose this gun court. And we worked hard to try and get the judges to accept that idea. And they decided not to. And that's their call. But then I was faced with, well, am I going to just sit here and do nothing because the judges don't want to do it? And that didn't sit well with me. So what I did was went around the country and looked at different jurisdictions that had some success with their gun crime, New York, Philadelphia, Kansas City. And we've adopted ideas from all of those jurisdictions that we're implementing in our office. And if the judges work with us, great. And I believe that they will. But if they don't, we can still go forward with what we're doing to combat gun crime. And I think after all is said and done, it's going to be more successful than the gun court idea that was originally proposed.
What will your yardstick be? Just simply seeing a reduction in the amount of gun crimes?
Well, I have a number of different yardsticks. I'm all about measuring things. So I want to see a reduction in gun crime. I want to get through the summer without a ridiculous amount of homicides. The rolling gun battles in broad daylight, those are gang-related. I want those to stop. But another interesting yardstick that I have is I have a picture of a young man, a selfie that he posted on social media of him with a gun. And this young man is a member of the downtown Taliban gang. And he's 19 years old. And six of his friends have been shot and killed recently in his gang. And he is, we know this from monitoring social media, he's interested in getting revenge. And I have his picture up on my desk because one of my measurable goals is I want him to still be alive at the end of the summer because I'm concerned that he's going to get shot and killed or he's going to shoot and kill somebody. And there's thousands of young men like that that we need to reach.
I'd like to move on to a couple of other subjects.
A heavier subject, maybe.
Heavier than that? I'm not so sure.
Happier
subject. We'll have that in the last segment of our program today with Seth Myers. Curious as to what your reaction was to the state legislature and the so-called Ferguson agenda, particularly with regard to police use of force. No action there, and the Missouri law, many people would say, needs to be amended.
I think that the statute could be changed to be in compliance with the Supreme Court decision. But I think the real opportunity for us as a community is to look at issues of police training. Now, I'm not an expert on how police are trained. I evaluate police conduct as part of my job, but I'm not an expert on training. But I have talked to experts, including Professor David Klinger, who's at UMSL. And he has shared with me that, and he's studied tons of police shootings around the country, and he has a term that he uses to describe most of them, which is awful but lawful. And so they're technically legal, but they didn't need to happen. And I think that is where our opportunity lies as a community, is to take a look at how police are encountering these situations, and are there ways that we can bend the trajectory of this engagement before it turns into a situation where the officer feels that their life is at stake and they need to fire.
Yeah. We have an email here from, I'm not sure what the name is, I can't quite get to it. It's from John saying, many cities in the U.S. with high crime rates of gun violence also have the lowest rates of gun crime prosecution, that crime gets plea bargained away. What are St. Louis prosecution rates for gun crimes, i.e. felony in possession?
Well, we prosecute every gun crime that we can, every single time. Our felon in possession statute is at risk right now, thanks to the Missouri legislature and their passing of the disastrous Amendment 5. We still charge it. And a lot of those cases are, you know, the judges are waiting to see what the Supreme Court says as to whether we can still bring a felon in possession case. But every chance we get to prosecute gun crime, we do. And we don't plea bargain those cases. But what happens is that we make our recommendation and defendants plead non-pursuant to our recommendation. They don't enter into a plea agreement. They throw themselves on the mercy of the court and they get probation.
What about body cameras? You for that for our police officers?
I am in favor of body cameras, but I want to make sure that it's approached in a smart way. It is an incredibly complex issue because, remember, prosecutors have a responsibility to turn over all evidence to the defense and to watch all evidence before we make a charging decision. So it's theoretically possible that a prosecutor would have to watch days' worth of body camera footage in order to make a decision as to whether to charge a case or not. And in the state of Missouri, you only have 24 hours to make that decision after arrest is made. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's all kinds of issues regarding making sure that that footage is available for defense to watch, storage of that footage, how are we going to be able to know that there is an incident, you know, who's going to be watching all of this film. I mean, there's a lot of issues.
Privacy issues among them, needless to say.
Well, huge privacy issues. But I think we need to work these out because I believe that body cameras is where we should be.
You like to see more cameras downtown and around town?
Yeah, I'm kind of funny about that. I'm a prosecutor, so I like surveillance. Mm. You know, when Chief Dotson was talking about the drone, I said he could park it over my house.
Lately, that'd probably be a good idea.
Yeah. I think that as long as you're not violating people's reasonable expectation of privacy, cameras are very, very helpful for law enforcement. They don't, however, take the place of eyewitness testimony. We still need that.
Let's take a call. John has been waiting in Overland. John, go ahead. You're on the air with Jennifer Joyce.
Hi, Jennifer Joyce. I must say you sound very reasonable and very fair.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. About the Vonnegut Myers case, and this will take 30 seconds at the most.
Okay.
This is what the Post-Dispatch reported, the background of the officer. It said the officer was arrested and charged with felony weapons violations at a high school, and he pleaded to a misdemeanor, pleaded guilty. He was ordered by a judge to take alcohol classes. He made several anti-black website postings. He said Michelle Obama looks drunk, high, and dumb as hell. And in the investigation you did, even though I'm not doubting what you did, mm-hmm. there's some interesting, because I don't know what happened, really. That the officer arrested the wrong man that he was looking for.
Mm-hmm.
But he initiated the physical confrontation by grabbing Butter. He admitted he grabbed him first after Butter Myers put his hands up, because he wouldn't comply. But he grabbed them. So if a person's hands up, you could start an arrest if you think it's the wrong person, I guess. But what about this background of the man and the fact that he was, and what I just said about having the wrong man and grabbing him first, but all that racist background.
John, your 30 seconds is up because time is getting away. Let's get a response.
I think that's a great question, John, and that's exactly why I wanted to come on this show. I think what people don't realize is my role as a prosecutor in reviewing this case is very, very narrow. Was a crime committed under Missouri law that night, and do we have evidence to prove it? My role is not to say whether or not this officer is a racist, or this officer is a good person, or this officer is somebody you'd want to invite to dinner at your house, or even that they should be a police officer. Those are all questions for the police department to answer. Those are all their policy questions. Mine was a crime committed that night. And so his background from when he was in high school is not relevant to that. What's relevant to that is the physical evidence and the eyewitness evidence and the ear witness evidence. And the fact that he misidentified Mr. Myers initially, that was something that we brought out in our report that hadn't been public before. We discovered that ourselves. That is concerning. I mean, it's not how you want these encounters to go. But at the end of the day, it did not give Vonderet Myers the right to shoot at the police officer. And once Mr. Myers pulled out a gun and started shooting at the police officer, then the police officer was entitled to return fire, and he did.
Let's take another call. Paul joins us from St. Louis. Go ahead, Paul, but make it quick, please.
Yes, Circuit Attorney Joyce, I had a question. After the Michael Brown grand jury decision was announced, we had extensive rioting and looting in my neighborhood on the south side on Grand Boulevard. And I've followed up with our officer, Slade, and to date, and it's been 6 months now, there's been only one arrest and prosecution coming from that. So I'm just concerned about the message that sends to property owners that, you know, the city and police can't take care of us. We're on our own to defend ourselves. So I just want to know what is happening and why was there only one prosecution coming out of that? Thank you.
Good question. And probably a better question for the police chief, because I'm not privy to know why they arrest some people and why they don't. I only know the cases that they bring to us. But I'll answer your question as Jennifer Joyce, the citizen. So this is probably a dollar in Metrolink. We'll get you on Metrolink here with this opinion. Boy, I bungled that. My feeling is that in the past, there was a lot more latitude given to the protesters last fall because of the fever pitch that was in the community and the concern that people had about it. And I think that a lot of times people were arrested for trespassing and not eventually prosecuted. A lot of those cases went to city court, and I don't think they were eventually prosecuted. However, I think going forward, it seems like there's a little bit of a different approach being taken by the police, and that they are not allowing people to just go on and block traffic and things of that nature. And I think the reason for that is that it takes a lot of resources for the police to allow that. And in this situation, I think they don't want to use those resources that way over the summer.
Thanks very much for the call. You know, Jennifer, a lot of the crime problems we have in the city of St. Louis and most urban areas involves drugs. Certainly no exception here in St. Louis. But there's a move afoot to legalize marijuana across the state. Your thoughts about that? Is that something that you could endorse? Does it make sense to you?
I don't know if I'd endorse it. I mean, I think that as long as you have precautions that people aren't driving while under the influence of marijuana and that children aren't exposed to it and sensible precautions like that, I would not necessarily be opposed to it. I'm watching very closely what happens in Denver. We have a daughter who lives in Denver, and seeing the issues that they're going through with it being legalized. But I certainly, it is way on the other end of the spectrum as far as the caseload in my office, where we have so many homicides and rapes and robberies and things of that nature. I think that marijuana, if the trend is to legalize it, as long as we're smart about that and we don't put people at risk, that's not something that I'm going to get terribly excited about.
We only have about 2 minutes left. Are we moving here in the city? Are we moving people through the system quickly enough? As you know, my son is a public defender. He speaks of people being in the jail downtown for extended periods of time.
I think of late, things have been moving a lot faster for a variety of reasons. But I think the Post-Dispatch just did a story on that as well. It's always in the best interest of the prosecutor to try the case as soon as possible. Delay never inures to our benefit. So I think your son and I would agree that faster is better.
Right. Okay. Again, we only have about 45 seconds left. Your pitch for the gun violence pitch that you want to make and why you're here.
Yeah, please, everybody. There's a lot that you can do to stop gun violence. Actions large or small, even as simple as writing a check or checking in on somebody or supporting a young person. unless we all work together on combating the social issues involved here, we're never going to be able to stop gun violence or even stem gun violence.
We'll put a link to your website on our website at slpublicradio.org. Thank you, Jennifer Joyce, St. Louis City Circuit Attorney. Coming up, a talk on the lighter side with comic Seth Meyers. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.